Talk Back with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on health and healing. A little bit on the environment and why we should pay attention, but a lot of opportunity for you to call in and share your points of view on any of the topics that we discuss on this program. I set aside one day a week not to do original investigative reports, not to have any guests, not even to do a commentary or issue of the day. Instead, it's all about healing. So you have a full hour to call in and ask questions, share thoughts and statements. And also let me mention that tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. over the Progressive Commentary Hour, we'll be having an in-depth discussion with a whole group of five panelists on why we should not allow gas hydrofracking, the exploration of gas, anywhere where you live. You should stop it in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. And we've only heard one side of the debate in the public arena. Those who watched the film Gasland, those who are part of our environmental movement, certainly will have much more information than the average person. But we're making a major effort, working together, joining forces to stop it. And I believe that we're making some very positive headway. That's tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. Now let's begin. First, herbs. Now there's one herb that is in the top 10. Turmeric. T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C. Now we know that turmeric builds the immune system. We know it stops free radicals if you've had x-rays or radiation exposure. We know if you have cancer, it can help prevent the cancer from metastasizing elsewhere in the body. It does all these great things. But I'll now hear something brand new. And as all of this reporting I give you, it all comes from mainstream science. Here's the latest on this. Turmeric can soothe your bowel. Now just imagine how many men and women in our society, even children, have Crohn's disease, ileitis, colitis, spastic bowel condition, constipation, diverticulitis, precancerous lesions in the bowel, all because of either stress, environmental pollutants, alcohol, or a bad diet, especially one that's high in protein. A high protein diet is the worst diet for your intestines and colon. Now, detoxifying it is important, but turning off the inflammation is the very first thing you should do. Now, this is in the British Journal of Nutrition, and here's what they say. That, and this was a whole international team that carried out this study, they found that the active ingredient in turmeric is curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, curcumin. It's that yellow constituent of turmeric. It turns off inflammation, and that's what causes a lot of problems in the body. Quote, Crohn's disease, a form of inflammatory bowel, can be aggravated or relieved by the sufferer's diet. Only by linking particular components to effects on the specific genotype can we get true understanding of the disease and how to treat it. This finding means that some people with Crohn's disease may benefit from eating turmeric. And that's important. Now, they're not even using a lot of it. They're using in the 100 milligrams. I'm suggesting 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,000. Much better, much more therapeutic. But again, it's mainstream science is catching up to what Ayurvedic medicine, those in not just the Indian subcontinent, but also in the Pacific Islands, they've been using turmeric for a long time. When I began a program 3 years ago, It was to be a one-year program on healing the brain naturally. It was a clinical study, non-medical. It was supervised by Dr. Martin Feldman, board-certified neurologist. And it was to help people who had any form of brain condition, dementia, forgetfulness, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS. We didn't have anyone with ALS join the group, but we did have people with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, and dementia. We had about, 40 people who were in the group originally. The very first day, I told them that we began always every one of the 47 clinical studies over the last 20 years, where more than 30,000 people have been involved. We asked them to begin by going on a gluten-free, dairy-free diet. And the first thing that people ask is, why? You know, if gluten's bad, why isn't my doctor telling me to do this? I'm being treated at Albert Einstein or Columbia or NYU. They have a lot of qualified nutritionists, dietitians, physicians. They've never said this. And that's correct. They haven't. And that's unfortunate because the scientific research is there. But we do tell them you have to get rid of this. In fact, they have to get rid of caffeine, soft drinks, artificial sweeteners, processed carbohydrates, fried food, deep fried food, baked goods, a whole lot of things they have to give up. Not easy. But once they start feeling the effects, which is generally 2 to 3 weeks in, and their eyes become clear, they wake up in the morning with more energy. Frequently, they've slept through the night without a problem. Then they start to realize, gee whiz, there's something to this. It works. Here's the latest, and this is where mainstream science is saying, give up the gluten, and you can help yourself with some conditions. Here are the conditions: diabetes and schizophrenia. This was done at the University of Highlands, and two studies that were undertaken, and they found that there was an enormous difference in the complications of diabetes. Now, what happens is this. The gluten has long been recognized as a trigger for serious diseases related to your gut, like, irritable bowel syndrome, and also digestive problems, colic. Now it is emerging that this dietary component, gluten, can also be associated with the incidence of other autoimmune diseases, including diabetes. Professor Megson, head of the department, explained the reason that gluten might provide a link between these apparently quite different diseases, schizophrenia and diabetes, is that in people with a particular genetic makeup that results in their body's inability to handle gluten in the normal way, the immune system becomes unusually active. So get rid of the gluten for 2 weeks and see what a difference you have. I know people who have chronic gas, bloating, distension after eating. That's all gone now. So give it up. See what happens. Most people don't eat sunflower seeds. You should. They're good for you for a lot of reasons. But according to the latest studies, photons from the sun are stored in the DNA of the sunflower, making its seeds resonate with the photons in human cells. This resonance is good for your whole body, and quite frankly, it makes sunflower seeds one of your best natural depression fighters. So sunflower seeds contribute to nerve health, and specifically, they're loaded in magnesium. Magnesium helps counterbalance calcium, and that regulates nerve function. Now, there's also a good quantity of the amino acid tryptophan, and tryptophan produces serotonin, and that improves your mood. Overall, these neurotransmitters help pass messages between nerve cells in the brain, and they're crucial for our sense of well-being, happy moods, and serotonin is one of the body's most important neurotransmitters. So when you release serotonin, you have that nice, relaxing, content feeling, and you can get rid of that emotional tension. In fact, many people say that when they have enough neurotransmitters, they feel mellow. So, that's It's serotonin's profound effect on the mind that makes Prozac and Paxil and other antidepressants popular drugs. These drugs act by artificially keeping serotonin levels high. Well, here's the problem. Higher serotonin can lead to agitation. You need natural serotonin, and for that, sunflower seeds. Also, carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates, are needed to help tryptophan cross the blood-brain barrier and get to where it can work. It's wonders. And serotonin can be stimulated by sunflower seeds blend of tryptophan and carbohydrates. So it's kind of an ideal depression fighter. So, and it's just very good also in its fiber content. So make sure that you get your sunflower seeds each day, or sunflower butter. That's even better, because then you're getting more concentrated amounts of the essential oils. And talking about oils, fish oil boosts intelligence scores in teenage boys. This is from the Gothenburg University in Sweden. It's published in their Pediatrica peer-reviewed journal, and says, quote, a number of studies have already shown that fish can help neurodevelopment in infants, reduce the risk of impaired cognitive function for middle age onward, and benefit babies born to women who ate fish during pregnancy. However, we believe this is the first large study to explore the effect on adolescents. So what they did is they looked at 4,700 15-year-old boys, and then they found that those boys who had the most fish in the diet, and hence the fish oils, had the highest intelligence scores. We've known for a long time that a good, healthy vegan diet, which, by the way, is not the same as just a vegan diet, because probably 80% of the people I know who have vegan diets today, younger people, they're unhealthy vegan diets. In fact, recently when I was down at Wall Street for the demonstrations, and I made 28 trips to Wall Street, providing food, insights, having a meeting with some of the participants and some of the coordinators, I talked about, you know, the diet, and the diet that gives you the best energy. And a lot of people were just assuming, because they didn't eat animals, that they were eating a healthy vegetarian diet. And they were surprised when I went through all the things that are wrong with bagels and pizzas and pastas. Well, now we know that a low-fat vegan diet helps not just stabilize your mood, gives you more energy, but is important if you want to help prevent diabetes. The new American Journal of Clinical Nutrition shows that if you have a low-fat vegan diet, you're far less likely to have diabetes, and you're more likely to lose weight and improve your blood sugars and cholesterol. And this was a 22-week initial study. So my suggestion is, look at the healthy vegan diets. And there's a lot of good programs, radio programs. Karen Hartglass has a very good program on being a vegan. And there's no shortages of articles. If you go to progressiveradionetwork.com, you'll see a lot on vegetarianism, healthy vegetarianism. One more reason to be a vegan. Now, for those of you who are vegetarian but you eat fish, because there are about 8 different types of vegetarian, and some are lactose, some are ovo, there's different combinations. I believe that as long as you're in a transition, going from point A to point B, it's fine. Not everybody can go to a strict organic vegan diet that's high in raw foods and juicing. It, for the vast majority of people, it's so disruptive to their normal schedule, it upsets them, and then they'll stop doing it. I'd rather have a person take their time. My philosophy is, take your time, take a year. Each week, for 52 weeks, take one unhealthy item out of your life. But the key is, leave it out completely. So let's say this week it's coffee, and next week it is soft drinks, and the next week it's artificial sweeteners, and the next week it's refined carbohydrates, and then chicken and beef and pork. One at a time, get rid of these things. So then that's something your body can adapt to, because quite frankly, if you're the average person, you're so loaded with toxins, you go on an extreme diet and you start detoxing, as a lot of people do, they have such a kill-off of the bad cells in the body that it, for about a week, it makes them feel terrible. They have no energy, they can't sleep, their digestion's upset, because their body is developing a process of getting the liver and kidney get this toxins out. People's body suddenly smells because toxins start coming out through the skin, through their sweat. So that's why you should detox gradually. And for most people, take a year. If you take a year, at the end of that year, doing one thing per week, you're going to keep that diet and most likelihood indefinitely. Science Daily is now catching on. This was done at the Westmead Hospital, University of Sydney, where they studied 2,400 patients, and they found that in their eye study, those who ate the highest amount of nuts and olive oil and fish had the greatest reduction in age-related blindness or macular degeneration. They felt that anything high in the omega-3 fatty acids and getting rid of all trans fats was associated with a lower risk of eye disorders. Why? Because trans fats and most of the food we eat actually produce inflammation. Now, if you really want to produce inflammation, have something that's deep fried or something that's really well done, like a steak or a hamburger or a boiled hot dog or barbecued ribs or pork chops, deep fried fish. That really increases inflammation. Then have alcohol in any quantity, and that produces inflammation. And that inflammation can last some time. Have x-rays, be around radiation. That produces inflammation. So we have no shortage of things that produce inflammation, and with that inflammation comes a greater likelihood of macular degeneration. Ginger reduces stress, and also the stress that comes from being nauseous after chemotherapy. So if you want to get rid of the nausea, if you're taking chemotherapy, and what people don't realize is that about 70% of all patients undergoing chemo develop real severe nausea. So according to the American Society of Clinical Oncology, when they were giving drugs, they found that the chemotherapy, they found that by giving ginger, it reduced the patient's nausea levels by 50%. This was funded by the National Cancer Institute. So if you are going to do chemotherapy, take ginger. And I suggest taking ginger, an actual piece of ginger, as juice, and you can put it in apple juice and apple celery juice with some fennel. Put a teaspoon of a combination of fennel and anise and some cinnamon, and put that into a juice, stir it up and drink it. Phenomenal for nausea. What helps knock out cancer and boost brain power? Spinach. That's according to the latest studies. And here's what it does. This is Harvard researchers. They found that it was the flavonoid intake, and they took a look at 66,000 women participating in the Nurses' Health Study. And they found that the women whose diets were the richest in the flavonoid, a specific flavonoid called camphorol, had a 40% reduction in ovarian cancer compared to the women who had the least amount. This was published in the Journal of Cancer. Now, prostate cancer responds to a carotenoid found in spinach and other green vegetables, and researchers have found that this carotenoid, neoxanthin, induces death in prostate cancer cells. Then it converts to a different compound in the intestinal tract. In that state, it lulls prostate cancer cells into the state of rest, preventing them from replication. And that was in the Journal of Nutrition. And researchers at the National Institute of Environmental Health Studies found there's a correlation between breast cancer risk and diets high in beta-carotene vitamin A. They found that by eating spinach and carrots more than twice weekly compared to not eating them at all was associated with a substantial reduction in the risk of breast cancer and prostate cancer, 44%. That was in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention. It's also a great brain food because spinach has flavonoids, and that helps prevents cancer. It's an antioxidant. It slows down the aging of the brain. So in study after study, spinach does a lot of good. Ovarian cancer and brain aging, So get your spinach in your juice. That's probably the best way of getting it because you get the best. Also protects your eyesight, and most people don't have it. And finally, before we go to our break, resveratrol. Now, we know it helps slow down the aging process. We know it protects the telomeres on the end of your chromosomes so you live longer. Here's the latest. This is from the American Journal of Physiology, Gastroenterology, and Live Physiology. At the University of South Florida Health Center, they did the research. Resveratrol is found to treat fatty liver disease, which is very common in the United States. And as people eat a poor diet, as they have alcohol, they build up toxins in the liver. Quote, our studies suggest that resveratrol may serve as a promising agent for preventing or treating human alcoholic fatty liver disease. Now, scientists have known for years that alcohol in any amount destroys liver cells. And then that, it inhibits the action of two proteins known as AMPK and SIRT1. And these proteins play a critical role in helping break down fats to remove them from the liver. And when their activity is disrupted, this leads to fatty buildup associated with liver disease, such as cirrhosis and fibrosis. And that can end up causing total liver failure. So I'm suggesting 200 to 300 milligrams a day of resveratrol. This article, by the way, was published in Nutrition Review. So that's the latest on health and nutrition. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take calls now, so you can give a call on the issues that are important to you. Anything we cover is open to discussion. Our number, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment with your calls. Everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to Monica in Los Angeles. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having this call-in program on health. We really need it. I'm calling for my sister. She's had this like chronic hacking cough. Especially happens when she gets in a room that's kind of surrounded by a little bit less air and more people. She seems to have had it since she's had like this, I guess it was a flu a couple months. Maybe even 6 months ago, she was coughing really deep, and ever since she's had that, you know, this hacking cough happens. It's dry, but then it develops some kind of phlegm, and kind of her nose starts to, you know, lubricate. And I'm just kind of concerned about it. What she can do for that?
First thing you should do, I would suggest, is get her in the hands of a holistic physician in the Los Angeles area. Secondly is ozone. Ozone, intravenous ozone would be my first approach. And then check to see what she might be exposed to, either environmentally or nutritionally. Now, generally, anything that causes mucus could be caused by an allergen. It could be caused by bacterial infection. I would also get her in the hands of a holistic dentist because frequently people don't realize that when you have infections in the mouth, or in the sinus cavities, the bacteria stays there. And then you continue to get what we call rebound infections. People don't think about the things you touch in a day. What do we touch every day? Well, we touch our telephones, our toothbrush, our handles of the toilet, the sink, the refrigerator, the doorknobs, tops of containers. People don't even think about when they buy things. When I go to the store and I buy food, first thing I do when I get home is I wash the exterior of the containers, whether it's rice milk or some sauerkraut, because think of the people that packaged that, took it off, put it on the shelves, then people that handled it in the store itself, picking up, reading the label, then other people who cash it out for you. A dozen or more hands could have touched that. What if they had bacteria? What if they had some form of resistant bacteria that could last for weeks, not just minutes or hours? So you clean up your environment, and you really clean it well. Two of the best things to do is combine hydrogen peroxide and alcohol, and then you really scrub. You have to actually agitate and scrub surface areas. That gets rid of everything. Put your toothbrush and hydrogen peroxide upside down, because otherwise a person brushes their teeth and they have some form of infection in the body. Every time they brush their teeth, they're reinfecting themselves. That's why we have people that stay with a lingering long-term infection, an allergen, flu, cold, etc. Then what happens is people don't realize the power of rest and the power of sleep, the power of rejuvenation. Most people are working so hard today and are also under stress that they never fully recover. They get to a certain place where they're functional, but they're not vital. And I think it's important for people to take that extra time and really recover completely. So if that means taking a few extra days or a week, do so. Also get rid of any allergens. Anything the person uses on a regular basis that could be allergenic, wheat, dairy, sugar, artificial sweeteners, all that can keep the body's immune system hyperactive and affect an autoimmune condition. That will prevent healing from viral and bacterial infections or allergens, because your immune system is simply out of balance. Next, I would look at using those nutrients and dietary measures that we know, whether it's a virus, bacteria, or allergen, can help rebalance the body's chemistry. For example, high up on my list would be colloidal silver, ASES, vitamin A, vitamin C in very high doses, bioflavonoids in high doses, zinc lozenges. I would use some free-form amino acids, garlic throughout the day, including in juices, L-lysine, maybe 500 milligrams 2-3 times a day, which is really important because it destroys viruses and it prevents cold sores around the mouth. And I would also use acidophilus, non-dairy, 2 times a day. Maitake mushroom, shiitake mushroom, reishi mushrooms, their extracts are very good. Or just eat them, you know, saute them. Olive leaf extract, 1,000 milligrams of olive leaf extract 2 or 3 times a day. I would do colloidal silver and wild oregano oil at the same time. Now, then some herbs you can do as herbs or botanicals would be astragalus. Now, astragalus, originally it was from Mongolia and also in China. It promotes the white blood cells, and that's one of the ways that the body naturally fights infections. Also wild pansy, Viola tricolora, which grows wild and in North America, and you use it as a cough syrup, as a tea. Boneset, B-O-N-E-S-E-T, that's an American herb, and it helps reduce fever. And then paudarco, P-A-U-D-A-R-C-O, that's also good. Cat's claw is very good and a real strong anti-inflammatory that helps clear up the mucus you were mentioning is called Chaunxin-Lin, C-H-A-U-N-X-I-N-L-I-A-N. It's a Chinese herb. And elderberry is very good for upper respiratory. Eucalyptus oil, just to breathe it in, put it maybe 10 drops in some boiling water and then just inhale it. And ginger is also good with your OT, the two together, as well as hyssop, H-Y-S-S-O-P. That's an evergreen that is also good as an antiviral. And mullein, M-U-L-L-E-I-N, also good for congestion. So by changing the diet, getting rid of anything that could be allergenic, getting the ozone and getting specific therapies for the local focal infections, having a full dental, holistic dental exam, because if you're holding local infections in your gums or if you have abscesses, you may not be fully aware of it, this can really imbalance your immune system. Hope that helps you. All the best to your sister. Let's say hello to John from New Jersey. Hi, John. You're on.
Hi, Gary. Thank you so much. Could you share, when you talk about the protocols that you have for different conditions, for example, my mom has a hypothyroid condition. Is there a specific juice combinations that are better to use versus just mixing all vegetables together? Doesn't matter what it, I mean, just all kinds of greens and you know, or carrots and broccoli and celery and ginger and everything just all in one, versus having like three or four separate ones at different times of the day.
What's your mom's condition?
Hypothyroid, just really tired, really weak, and losing appetite. And just she's in her 70s and having some challenges, yeah.
I would suggest that she speak with Dr. Martin Feldman, who is one of America's leading authorities on thyroid, both hyper and hypothyroidism. He and I wrote an article together. Why don't you start by reading the article? That would be
I read that already.
Okay. Then, as you know, you have to do a whole detoxification process. And getting rid of heavy metals is crucial because heavy metals, lead, cadmium, mercury, that build up over a lifetime can disrupt the normal functioning of the thyroid gland. Also, when the body reduces its human growth hormone, that can adversely affect the thyroid gland. When we're under stress and the adrenal glands are pumping out adrenaline and we exhaust our adrenals by chronic stress, that can affect the thyroid gland. So what you need is you need to have an energy, what I would call an energy evaluation. It's known as a kinesiological evaluation, and then follow it up with a lab test to confirm it. And so often they're absolutely the same. And Feldman is the best person I know for doing a kinesiological energy exam, as well as a standard blood workup as a verification later, so you can then rebalance the thyroid gland. Okay? All the best to you, John. Let's say hello to Joan from New York. Hi, Joan.
How are you? You may remember me. I once did a writing and healing program with you many years back. I'm a big follower of everything you do. Here's my question. I had a mammogram, I guess about 2 years ago, and she noticed like a little spot on there that she thought was nothing, and it hasn't changed. She did a sonogram. I did thermography through Dr. Feldman, and she still recommended that I do an MRI. Do you think that is necessary?
I can't tell you whether a particular test is necessary or not. If you don't do the test and then you find out there's something there, you're going to say, oh, well, why didn't you make this suggestion?
Right.
An MRI is not the same as a CAT scan. It's not the same as a mammogram. But it is important for some diagnosis. I believe that the measurement of heat in the breast tissue is, from my perspective, far more accurate and far more revealing, because the body will manifest heat at the level of a abnormal cell development before you can actually find it on any X-ray. And so thermography, in my opinion, is a much better science for diagnosis. I've seen people who've had repeated mammograms that were normal, but then they ended up developing cancer, wondered why, and had they done the thermography would have picked up the heat. So remember, the body shows imbalance through heat. And then there's a way of gauging normal heat, especially you can gauge one breast to the other and each part of the breast. And this way gives you some indication. Then if you see there is an imbalance, then if you want to go for a more specific diagnostic procedure, at least there's good reason to do so. Then that's a legitimate way of doing it. So that's how I would approach it.
I hear what you're saying. Are you against, do you, with the MRI, do they inject you with something?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that you're aware of. And are you? Do you feel that mammograms are not a good idea, that they are actually dangerous?
Oh, absolutely. I feel mammograms should be banned.
Okay.
I believe they're a medical fraud. I believe that Dr. Samuel Epstein, the MD, PhD, Chairman Emeritus of Environmental Sciences, University of Illinois, is the world's leading authority on mammograms. And he has spent his entire adult life debunking them and showing the lack of science behind them. He's written several books just on this very topic, as did Dr. John Goffman. And if you remember, mammograms became most popular when Happy Rockefeller, the wife of Governor Rockefeller, had a breast cancer. And that's when people were told, go get your breast cancer x-rays now. And they were promoting it as the younger you start, the quicker in life, if you have any abnormality in the breast, you're going to find it, and therefore by having radical mastectomies, you can prevent it. Then, after that, you had the idea that radical mastectomies were better than simple lumpectomies. And then it was radical mastectomies and take out many of the glands underneath the armpit, not realizing those glands are there for a very specific reason. They help filter out toxins, including cancer cells, out of the body, the lymphatic glands. And the lymph fluid carries a lot of toxins out. But they were really way, way far invasive. And every study hence has shown that. There's no controversy on that, that it was overused. Radical mastectomy was overused. And finally, after 30 years of overusing radical mastectomies, then suddenly, lo and behold, they discover simple lumpectomies. Well, those simple lumpectomies had been around for at least 30 years. Here's the problem. In medicine, it takes about 30 years before a bad therapy is finally abandoned. And then they got the idea, okay, let's genetically test you. So then all these mothers were bringing their daughters in to be tested. I'm talking about teenagers. And if you had the gene that they absolutely were certain would cause breast cancer later, isn't it more prudent to get your completely healthy, normal breasts taken off now? The idea is, and it's logical from their point of view, if you have a chance of having breast cancer in the future by a test, genetic test now, and we can get rid of those chances of having breast cancer, let's take those healthy breasts and get rid of them. So thousands of American teenagers had their completely normal, healthy breasts removed because they had a positive reading on this genetic test. At the time, I was telling the people, at least in my audience, this is a fraud. There is no accuracy to this test. And lo and behold, 20 years later, it was shown there was no accuracy in the test. I wonder how many of those surgeons apologized to the young ladies for sexual mutilation. And I consider it sexual mutilation. I consider it an assault against women's body. But we've always been assaulting women's body in medicine. And very, very rarely, historically, until the advent of the women's movement, did women fight back. And one of those women who fought back and one of the leaders of the feminist movement in the 20th century was my co-author, Barbara Seaman. She and I wrote a definitive book, 1,643 pages, called For Women Only. I was told at the time by my agent that nobody would publish this book. It was too big. And nobody would read it. And I said, I believe that there is a market there. I believe that people want definitive information. Since all the information is getting smaller and smaller and shorter, let's give them something just the opposite, definitive. It took us a year before we found a publisher, and lo and behold, they ended up selling 75,000 copies of that at $75, making it one of the most popular hardbacks of the year. And at our book signing at Barnes & Noble at 82nd and Broadway, we had 54 of America's leading feminists there to talk about the book, because we had quoted about 168 of the world's leading feminists, many of whom contributed material to the book itself. Now, if you go back and read that, and that's 14 years old now, you will see that we were talking about procedures then that we considered dangerous to women that were antiquated that are still popular today. So it takes about 30 years to finally get medicine to stop using a bad technique. The, one of the worst things they're doing to women today is synthetic hormone replacement therapy. We can turn off women's hot flashes easily using natural hormone replacement therapy and detoxification, and we can prevent osteoporosis, the only two reasons to use synthetic hormone replacement therapy, and we can remineralize a woman's bones naturally without a problem, dietarily and easily. And we've proven it because Dr. Peter Ago, in a study at the Tri-State Healing Center, took a group of women with advanced osteoporosis, and over a period of time, we showed through a bone density measurement that we were actually able to remineralize their bones, all naturally. So I've been arguing against genetic testing for cancer. It's a complete and total fraud, and any doctor who does it should lose their license to practice medicine, and women should start suing their doctors for having their healthy breasts removed because all they did was remove their healthy breast. It didn't prevent cancer. Now, just use logic and common sense. You don't need to be a scientist to follow what I'm going to say. If you did have a gene that would predict cancer, we now know that lifestyle modification can change the outcome of genetic expression. So the mere fact that you may have a genetic expression that will guide you in a certain way, by radically changing your lifestyle, you can alter that completely. So it doesn't mean that the gene will express itself. But then let's say we do just the opposite. Let's say that we're not necessarily eating healthy or living a healthy lifestyle, but we have the gene, and so we cut off our breasts. Completely healthy breasts, we cut them off. Does that mean then that the predisposition to breast cancer wouldn't also manifest in an unhealthy lifestyle to lung cancer, to bladder cancer, to pancreatic cancer, to some other cancer in the body? So the whole rationale behind it is wrong. And part of the reason that medicine is so bad today, in at least 88 to 90% of what it practices, very good in about emergency medicine and acute care, we're very good, but in chronic care, we're very bad, is because we are strongly monotheistic. Do you know what monotheism is?
Yes.
What is it?
Well, it's a belief in one deity, I guess you would say.
It's single-mindedness.
That's another thought.
That you keep focused. Do you realize how dangerous monotheism is in all of its extrapolated forms?
I think that, you know, you can be a very mystical, spiritual person and perhaps use the word monotheism, but I think what you're trying to say is that one has to always keep a very open mind. I think that's what you're trying to say, and not just go down one road. Am I understanding you correctly about
yes,
that?
Yes, but I'm using monotheism as the religious belief, almost mystical belief, in the healing power of physicians.
Oh, that, definitely, you're right, absolutely.
Because physicians are the high priests of the religious
right, exactly.
Order of medicine.
Oh, in that sense, yes, I wouldn't, I don't know if I'd use monotheism for that, but I agree with you 100%. I think everybody ought to experiment with different...
I agree. Joan, here is the problem we're faced today. We're only allowed limited truths. The truth of our official belief system. So if you're a physician, and there are over 900,000 physicians, and if you're told that you will be rewarded and not sued and not criticized if you use a drug that's been FDA approved. So the mere moniker of FDA approved means that even if you kill people with your drug like Vioxx, and 60,000 Americans were killed with Vioxx in 4 years and 150,000 had heart attack and strokes, and many of those, I'm quite sure, have succumbed since then. Then, because that would mean that there is zero follow-up fatality with strokes and heart attacks, and that's simply not true. But you cannot be sued as the doctor. But also, you don't have to apologize, as no doctors did that I'm aware of. And also, you don't have to give any of the money back, and you're continued to be rewarded. So your single belief system protects you because you are sanctioned to do anything you want once your belief system is said to be the ultimate power, the ultimate authority. Now, when there's only one truth, official truth, the news media can only report on the official truth. In other words, anything that comes to that official media, like the New York Times or any other news outlet, must be first weighed against the official truth. So let's say that you are a highly educated feminist teacher, and you're showing that alternative cancer therapies work better than orthodox therapies. And you have the evidence to prove it. You have studies, you have clinical experience. The orthodox media, the official media that represents the official institutions and therefore the official truth, will take what you have to say and they will then offer that to the official institution like the National Cancer Institute, the American Cancer Society, who will then say, this is all nonsense, it's anecdotal, it's quackery. You will do no further research. You will simply tell these people, sorry, we're not interested in the story, or you will downplay its significance. Because part of what you do when you're in the official media, you need official access. So you don't want to end up cutting off your sources, and your sources are there to help you keep in your position. The same thing with no matter how many times the military-industrial complex, the Pentagon, or any of its agencies lie to you and the American public, the next time you approach them on a story, it's as if they've been given a clean bill of health. You must wipe the past clean and start as if they're going to tell you the truth this time. Well, you start looking at how many times they lied, and they have a pattern of habitual lying, and then you say, well, why should I be trusting them this time? And the answer is you shouldn't. But as long as they're the official final source of truth, and you're merely one of the facilitators of truth, you're a form for truth, then you will never find a conspiracy. There'll be no questioning the 9/11 Commission or the Warren Commission or the Martin Luther King Commission. There'll be no questioning the weapons of mass destruction lies, the Gulf of Tonkin false flag. In other words, no matter what happens, the invasion of Libya, you must accept the official version because you're a part of the official truth. Now then think of how many different people in our society. The Democrats, they're official. The Republicans, they're official. Now, when was the last time that any of the Democrats or any of the Republicans in the national level had anything that would represent a universal truth, one that exceeded the official truth? They don't. Hence, nothing ever gets better, only gets worse. The official bureaucracy say, feed us, and we will grow. And it costs us $100,000 per employee. And we will grow stronger. And we will take more control over your lives. And we will pass laws that we don't need, regulations that are cumbersome, burdensome. And we will extract more in our taxes. We will penalize you. We'll take away your public services or pensions. But you will never reduce us. We are incapable of monitoring, quality of work, accountability, and transparency. And everybody goes, okay. And the Republicans say, we're against big government. Are you against big Defense Department? No. How about the banking system? Against big banking? Too big to fail? No. Are you against a big medical industry complex, $2.6 trillion this year, big insurance companies, and big medical for-profit organizations, big pharmaceutical, against that and their subsidies? No. Against big companies that make a lot of money but pay no taxes? No, we're not against that. Against cargo and the big food industry? No. Are you against the big energy combines like nuclear and gas and gas hydrofracking, and coal and clean coal, mountaintop removal? No, we're not against any of that. Then what exactly are you against? Oh, we're against any form of subsidies for poor people. I see. and the Democrats are just as bad. Now, why is it that both the Democrats and Republicans never seem to have positive solutions and only continue to contribute to wars, globalization, imperial and colonization, interference in every democratically elected government in the world, and complete lies and manipulation of our media? Because they are official. So they're official. The reporters on, like Keith Oberman, he's official. Rachel Maddow, she's official. Ed, he's official. Lawrence O'Donnell's official. Bill O'Reilly's official. Lynn Beck's official. He may be eccentric, may seem like he's irresponsible in a lot of his statements, which he is, but he's still official. Laura Ingraham. So now you have two different groups of people where they're both official. So as long as they're official, they'll be quoted. They have resources. They'll get funding. They'll have their official left funding and official right funding. So no truths are going to come out of any of this. But now let's say you go outside of that. You go to Alex Jones. He was right all along. He may have been extreme in some of his thoughts, but he was right when he said the bankers have the power. He was right, but he wasn't official. BAI is not official. Pacifica, not official. NPR is official. And because NPR is official, it has about as much relevancy to truth as Wonder Bread does for building strong bones. So the average person is tied into so many official religions or official political institutions or official jobs or official corporations or official media outlets that they're frustrated because no matter how much of their energy they give in support of those official paradigms, nothing positive happens. We had an official bubble, and we had official credit card bubble, student loan bubble, official and fully accepted high interest loans, some of those loans on a used car, 30%, and we had an official home foreclosures. We officially bailed out the banks that officially got us into trouble. We elect politicians that are official whores, and all they do is they will do whatever they want as long as they're paid, so they keep in their official positions of power. Heaven forbid they actually have to go out into the real world and compete. And even the major corporations don't like real and authentic competition. So they stack the deck by being able to have unlimited amounts of money so they can buy competition. And therefore, they're too big to fail. So we have official institutions that cannot fail. And the Federal Reserve gave $16 trillion of official money with nothing to back it up to 22,000 transactions, all in secret, at zero interest, but not a penny to you and I. So the frustration for the average person is, as long as they stay connected to anything official, they will never find the truth, they will never be able to make authentic change, and they will continue to live these kind of supercilious, superficial lives until they're close enough to their own death to realize that their mortality quickly approaching, maybe they should have done a few things differently and with more authenticity. But how could they, since they were fully conditioned, fully propagandized, and fully controlled, fully rewarded, to keep fully obedient the entire time? So now that we're seeing people in the streets, it scares us. But it doesn't scare us too badly, because the official media on the right will say they're all a bunch of nut jobs or Nazis, as they've already stated, which are not true. And on the left, they'll say these are today's modern heroes, which is also not true. Where were they until 40 days ago? The world didn't exist except whatever could be done to help them. So they didn't question the high credit card debt. They didn't question the future. They didn't question the ability to create debt and to live in a globalized world as a part of the official culture of consumerism. Now that they suddenly woke up, suddenly the whole world is supposed to kiss their asses and say, thank God you are here to save us. And I have to say, hold on a second, before we get overwhelmed with this idea that we have all these people showing up, A, it's a tiny fraction of people without a real clear and definitive message. They have a lot of messages, not one. Let us not forget that if you really want to know how to make real good things happen, then why don't you go back and look at the feminist movement, the civil rights movement, the union movement, because they actually existed before you woke up 40 days ago. Ah, they did? Yeah. Can you name me anyone? Can you name me 10 feminists from the 1800s? How about 10 union leaders from the 1800s? Can you name me 10 civil rights leaders from the 1800s? And the answer is no, no, no. Anywhere, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, they're a bunch of idiots. But we don't like to say that because we treat them as if they're gold in their spirit. They show up. We're supposed to idolize them. Oh, thank you so much. Don't stress yourself on any level because we're so glad you're here. Well, fine. But like everything else, it's official. The moment it becomes an official demonstration, watch how it's co-opted, watch how it's standardized, and then emulsified into one side or the other, and then it becomes irrelevant to the truth anymore. So pride yourself in waking up one day and no longer being official. If you can live off the grid of officialdom, then at least you have a chance to see truths that you otherwise will not experience within the official institutions. Hope that answers your question. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to join us. I'm Gary Nall. And remember, tomorrow evening, a full hour on the dangers of gas hydrofracking. That's important. And that's what we should be focusing on. Let's say hello to Mike Rubert, who's on hold, and his program begins next. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary. You were sounding a really good tonight. I was really enjoying what you were, the observations you were making. High five. Good job.
What's you up to tonight?
Well, I'm really tired today because I went out and occupied Santa Rosa last night and slept out in a sleeping bag with all the occupiers. We made the city manager back down. They were going to remove us by force using whatever means necessary, but just before we started the march, there were a great many veterans showing up, willing to put their bodies in harm's way between the cops and the protesters, and the city manager backed down. So Occupy Santa Rosa is alive and well. Charles Eisenstein is coming back with us tonight. He was a very popular guest a few weeks ago, and we're going to talk about money tonight.
Sounds great. I look forward to listening to it.
Thanks, Gary.
I'm on the road. I'll be on the road for another 56 days. I'm filming poor people, challenged people, financially challenged. I'm filming people who are not the traditional poor, not the poor where I grew up in Appalachia, not the poor in the dirt farms in Mississippi, Louisiana. I'm talking about the new poor, those who are frequently college educated, people who were living what they thought was the American dream are now scrambling. A lot of them are down and out. I'm spending time with them, unrushed, all over America, so that you can see a different face of the new poverty. This is for a documentary series I'm doing called Poverty, Inc., and I'll premiere that in the springtime. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned to Michael Rupert here on the Progressive Radio Network. Thank you.